I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Okay, here's the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews.
Very good. Thanks for joining us for the daily update. I'm joined by...
In the state of Victoria, every day the Premier gives an update.
First things first, there are 12,335 cumulative cases of coronavirus in Victoria. That's 439 more than yesterday.
Reading out a sombre list of deaths.
In terms of tragedy, I'm sad to have to inform you that there are now 147 people who have died as a result of this global pandemic. That is 11 more since our last update.
While he doesn't name these people, we do know some things, like their age.
If I can go through some detail as much as I can, one man in his 70s, one man and three women in their 80s.
The majority are elderly, with nearly 100 deaths in Victorian aged care homes so far.
Two men and three women in their 90s and one woman who was in her hundreds. All of those tragedies, all of those fatalities are connected to aged care settings.
More than half of deaths in that state. Now, there are calls for an inquiry into how COVID-19 spread through these homes, with experts saying there were warnings about the vulnerability of this sector, stretching back over many years. Today, how COVID-19 laid bare the cracks in Australia's aged care system. It's Wednesday, the 5th of August.
Most of what I do is through a great feeling of injustice, and that's why I do it, yeah.
Dr. Sarah Russell is a public health researcher and aged care advocate.
And my mother was in an aged care home back in 2010 until 2015. And I went to visit her most days when she was in the aged care home. And I became very interested in the systemic problems in aged care. So I now call myself an aged care advocate. And I started a group called Aged Care Matters. I don't have a job in aged care. So most of my aged care advocacy work is voluntary.
Sarah, where do you think the current problems with aged care start?
I think we really need to go back to 1997.
Here is a broadcast by the Prime Minister, John Howard, for the Liberal Party of Australia for the federal election.
Thank you. Thank you. Can I now turn to an issue that is important to all of us, and it's been something that's always helped to define what kind of society we are, and that is the care of the elderly within our community.
This was during John Howard's government.
Can the Prime Minister inform the House of the benefits of the government's aged care reforms, which took effect yesterday, the 1st of October?
There was a real sense that we're not going to be able to afford aged care. They were sort of looking at the demographics. We have an ageing population in Australia.
The Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I say in reply to the Honourable Member that the reforms to the aged care sector, which have been carried out by this government and for which I warmly thank the Minister for Family
Member
Services,
for Grindler,
are changes and reforms that were long overdue.
And they decided, with some help from some private providers, that it was time to do a new Aged Care Act.
Notice number 8, Aged Care Bill, 1997. Minister.
And this Aged Care Act actually encouraged private investment.
And I want to make it very plain to the House that these reforms will inject a much-needed amount of additional capital into Australian nursing homes. Most importantly, the model that has been used in these reforms is essentially the model that was followed by the Keating Labor government.
It made it much easier for big companies and corporations, things like private equity firms, superannuation and property real estate investment trusts, people and corporations who knew nothing about aged care but saw it as an opportunity to make money, they almost flooded the sector.
It's been a long week.
On the 10th of February this year, I circulated a statement entitled Steps to Better Care. This statement detailed the government's commitment to a new era in the provision of residential aged care in this country based on dignity, comfort and...
Right, so a new Aged Care Act is introduced that encourages private companies to get involved in the sector. How does that actually work now? Who funds and runs this system?
Okay, the aged care sector is run by the federal government. So they fund around $20 billion into aged care via government subsidies. So that goes into both home care and residential care. In Victoria, we also have some state-owned aged care homes, only about 200. So they're quite a small proportion. There's about 2,700 aged care homes in Australia. So we have 200 of those are owned by the Victorian government, and they are operating under a different legislation called the Safe Patient Care Act.
Okay, so Victoria has a slightly different setup than others with some state government-run aged care homes, but by and large, you have private companies that fall under federal government legislation in this sector. Can you tell me a bit more about these private companies? Who are they?
The private companies, both the for-profit and not-for-profits, there's a whole mixed bag in there. We have family-run businesses. We have church-operated aged care homes. But we also have these big companies. We have the stock-listed companies, which are Estia, Regis and Japara. And we have other very large companies like Bupa and Opal. And they have built very large aged care homes. So they are the ones that we're spending billions of dollars in aged care subsidies, government subsidies, go to these big companies that do not only do aged care, some of them like Bupa does a whole range of other things like health insurance as well as aged care. So we've got these big, large behemoth, I can't even say that word, behemoth companies also running aged care homes now.
Can we see a clear difference between how these private companies are run versus the state-run companies?
Well, we know, for example, that standards of care in an aged care home is very reliant on the staffing. We know that the more staff and the better qualified staff in an aged care home is going to improve standards of care. We know that a chandelier in the lounge room, which some of these smart private homes have, maybe not a chandelier, but certainly a very nicely appointed lounge room, that doesn't actually indicate the standards of care. What indicates the standards of care is the staffing, both numbers and skill mix. The skill mix is very important. Mm. And we know that the state-run aged care homes in Victoria have mandated the ratios.
And what are those numbers? What's the difference between public and private in terms of staffing?
So in the Victorian aged care homes, there's one registered nurse for every 15 residents. Mm. Now, these people have had between 1.5 and 3 years training. They are, you know, they're qualified and clinically capable. Mm. Whereas if you can compare that to the private aged care homes, there are many of them where a registered nurse is required to look after more than 100 residents.
Wow.
And in my view, that is unsafe.
So one nurse for every 15 residents in state government homes versus one nurse for 100 in the private sector is pretty shocking. That's the stark difference. Have private companies changed anything else with the workforce in aged care?
Well, these corporations, they casualise the workforce, basically. The workforce, if you look at the statistics, back in sort of 1997, a large proportion of the staff in an aged care home were registered and enrolled nurses. As these corporations moved in, a new set of workforce really, which is assistants in nursing or sometimes called personal care attendants, they also came into the workforce, and a lot of them were casualised, a lot of them weren't full-time workers. So we've got this workforce that is casual, it's very lowly paid, it's a casual personal care attendant would earn about $22 an hour. and they don't have paid leave. They don't have annual leave and sick leave. But my biggest problem with these people is also that their lack of training. They aren't as qualified to look after older people as a registered nurse is.
Okay, so we have these issues with a privatised industry. Were there warning signs that, you know, a disaster was coming for this sector before this pandemic?
We've had so many warning signs. You could go back to almost 2000.
The Deputy State Coroner, Evelyn Vicker, has recommended aged care facilities take family concerns more seriously after the death of an 85-year-old woman.
You've had so many coronial investigations.
The state government has launched an investigation into a mental health facility in Adelaide's north.
Frail residents tied to chairs, dementia patients beaten and bruised, 16,000 people dying on waiting lists for home care each year.
And then we had the interim report of the Royal Commission.
Today we've seen the release of the Royal Commission into the aged care sector's interim report. And as the Prime Minister said when he announced the Royal Commission, that we needed to be prepared for some very, very difficult conversations and to hear some very difficult things.
It was titled Neglect, and yet we, you know, we get it gets onto the front page of the newspaper for a very short time.
What we have been is shocked at the extent of what we've found. But importantly, what's happened is that this process has given senior Australians in particular a voice, an important voice.
So I've had so many warning signs that this was coming.
I said to industry last week, in anticipation of the report being released, that it would put us all on notice. It has certainly done that. It's done that in spades.
Yeah. We've had warnings about aged care and how vulnerable those facilities are.
Gay Alcorn is Melbourne editor for Guardian Australia.
Whether you look overseas,
the effect of COVID-19 on care homes in Britain has been devastating. These are places where the elderly and frail should hope to live out their lives in comfort and safety.
You see them sweeping through aged care facilities in Spain and Italy and the UK. Or even we've had warnings in Australia.
The coroner's van arrives at Newmarch House after a fourth coronavirus sufferer died inside.
Particularly with Newmarch House in Sydney in April, May, where they had almost 20 deaths.
Government. Anglicare is now at risk of losing its licence at the aged care facility near Penrith for failing to control the catastrophic outbreak of COVID-19.
So the question that a lot of people are asking is, what did we learn then? Was there enough training for the staff? Was there enough personal protection equipment for the staff? And there's been a lot of allegations that really there weren't, and certainly not early enough. Masks are now compulsory in aged care facilities, but they weren't until a couple of weeks ago. So there's a lot of things that, you know, in hindsight you can see them, but you could say that there were a lot of things that were not done in aged care that at least made this outbreak, whether it was inevitable or not, a lot worse than it could have been.
So we had these warning signs before the pandemic, then the pandemic hits. Was anything done to prepare this sector for the onslaught of COVID-19?
When the pandemic broke, the peak bodies that advocate on behalf of the providers, they wanted a lot of money given to them because they have been saying for many years that they're underfunded. So they wanted extra money and a lot of extra money. They took out a full-page ad in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age asking for more money. Mm. So the government did cave into them again.
With respect to the announcement that the Prime Minister's mentioned for a COVID-specific support payment of $205 million across the sector. The sector will understand this more than perhaps others in the broader community.
Now, that money was meant to help the providers to cope. The big thing that was going around about March, April was paid pandemic leave. The Fair Work Commission had been lobbied by the unions to ensure that aged care workers had paid pandemic leave. And they, back in April, said there wasn't enough evidence for it.
just to clarify, the federal government gave the sector $200 million to help them prepare for COVID-19, but this wasn't passed on in terms of sick leave, in terms of some sort of pandemic leave for the workers. Is that right?
Well, this is, again, the good providers would surely have, A, employed more staff, would have certainly offered sick leave, would have done the right thing. We've got this large number of providers who aren't doing the right thing. They haven't done the right thing for the last 20 years. So why do we expect them to do the right thing now? So, again, I'm sure some did, but what I'm hearing from staff is many of them were not offered paid leave.
So, Gay, I've been hearing from Sarah about the casual workforce in aged care that has very little leave. Do we know that this makeup of the workforce has contributed to the spread of COVID-19 in aged care in Victoria?
Yes, it has. And I think that's undoubted that it has. It's a little bit more complicated picture than that. I mean, the figures that I've seen are about 10% are actually casual in aged care facilities, but quite a few more, a lot more, are part-time. And what we've been told is that, and we've been told it quite specifically by the Premier and others, is it quite a large number of the cases in aged care are brought in from workers. Mostly they're brought in from workers. For instance, the St Basil's, which is the biggest outbreak here, that's been traced back to a worker who was asymptomatic. So that's one of the awful things about this bloody virus, is that you can be infectious without actually having symptoms. But the other thing that's been mentioned by the health experts and the Premier is that some workers, because they had insecure work, because they didn't have paid sick leave, might have been a little bit ill or might have been sort of thinking about going for a test, and because they couldn't afford to lose a day or two, they were going to work too and they spread it. And so it's undoubted that the nature of the workforce that we know is underpaid, insecure, that we know is also moving between workplaces. That's been stopped now. But one of the provider groups said that between 20 and 30% of the workforce had different jobs, had a second or third job. So that's another way it's being spread.
Okay, when did the full extent of the spread of COVID-19 in aged care and its disastrous consequences become clear? When did we know that this was really going to be a defining moment of this pandemic?
I've been looking back, actually, at the dates, because it's all such a rush at the moment. But, you know, in June, Victoria had, you know, days of no cases and we came out of lockdown.
Chris, good morning to you. A surge in cases in Victoria have medical experts concerned.
Carl, of course, that is it is the real concern as restrictions ease that numbers are going to rise.
There was in about mid-July, we've had two outbreaks in aged care, or we've got five new cases in aged care. And then suddenly it exploded.
Victoria's coronavirus outbreak is now being monitored hour by hour.
Health authorities are struggling to stop the spread through
the second wave outbreak is reaching crisis point in our aged care homes.
Sources told me this morning that we've now hit a tipping point when it comes to the outbreaks we're seeing in the aged care facilities in Victoria.
St Basil's, which is the facility with the highest number of cases.
Major operation is underway at St Basil's aged care tonight to remove the last of the residents from the troubled facility.
Went from, and I've got the figures here somewhere, but, you know, a few cases to 13 cases to 51 cases.
St Basil's aged care in Fawkner tonight stands accused of serious mismanagement as cases linked to that facility soar.
And there were some terrible stories of a period of chaos for a few days where people may not have been getting fed properly, some stories of, you know, malnourishment or real neglect, not getting the care they needed. A lot of these residents have got dementia. They can be quite confused. Some reports of, you know, soiled bed sheets. They were very, very distressing for the relatives. And that's when we really started to hear that there's something going very badly wrong in some of these facilities.
Some of the stories we've seen are unacceptable.
Premier Dan Andrews has been very distressed about what's been going on in aged care.
Well, my mother is in her mid-70s. She has some underlying health issues, but she lives at home.
And you'd have to say he's emphasised that these are private facilities. These are not the state-run facilities. And he's hasn't blamed all of the facilities, but he's said in some cases they have been absolutely below standard to what anyone would expect.
I would not let my mum be in some of these places. I just wouldn't.
As I say, not all the facilities have got these problems, but it's been so distressing because people are extremely vulnerable. I mean, I've heard some people say, look, if we had more than half the deaths in Victoria that were school children and their parents couldn't see their kids and they were dying because they have not got good care, there'd be an absolute outrage. And I think there is an outrage, but there's somehow a sense that, oh, we've neglected aged care for so long that we put people out of sight, out of mind when they're at their most vulnerable and frail, that somehow we turn a blind eye. But it's been a real wake-up call that not just about this coronavirus and how it's been treated, but how we treat elderly people much more generally and in a more structural way in this country.
Next, the government steps in to try and contain this outbreak. So what has the government, both state and federal, done to address these problems?
So it's been extremely messy. Both levels of government now say that this is settling a little bit, that some of these facilities are now stable. So what they did is that the state government has introduced a $1,500 pandemic leave, and that's vital because it means that people in aged care or other facilities too, if they don't have sick leave, if they've got no way of being able to support themselves if they do get ill, they can get that money to pay their bills and so on. They've also introduced an important thing though, which is a $300 payment, which means if you've been tested but that you haven't got your result back yet, then you can get $300 waiting for the result if you haven't got sick leave. The federal government, look, honestly, they've been pushed since for several months now to introduce pandemic leave for people who are ill and don't have any other method of supporting themselves. They have finally come to the table on that with pandemic leave. The other thing the federal government has done, which has been important, is to give a retention bonus for aged care workers in particular to try to keep them in the industry. And they've also made sure that people aren't going from workplace to workplace and potentially spreading the virus. They've tried to say, look, you can stay in the one workplace and you will not be disadvantaged. They've thrown masks in. They've improved the infections training. Again, there's some criticism that didn't happen early enough, but they have done that now.
So we've had these multiple announcements from state and federal governments about paid pandemic leave. How is this going to work and why did this take so long?
Well, the way it's going to work now, is what we understand, is that now that the federal government has announced its payment too, that it will be picking up, according to The Guardian anyway, it'll be picking up most of the payments to Australian citizens. But Victoria, it'll be supplementing that, particularly with temporary visa holders who need the payment as well. Why it took so long? Oh, that's a longer discussion. But it took too long because there was resistance from the private providers to paying any supplement at all for their workers, and because the federal government did resist, it seemed to me, a long time before finally realising that this was essential if they're going to get this virus under control.
As we've discussed with Sarah, that these private facilities get billions of dollars in government subsidies and they received another $200 million to deal with the pandemic. Do we actually know where this money has gone, not just in the past few months, but in general?
My understanding is that we do not, that one of the problems, and the Royal Commission pointed this out strongly too, was the lack of transparency in this sector. I mean, 80% of their funding comes from the federal government, but we do not have any details about the data that they have and where they spend the money.
To me, this is a no-brainer. We need to have financial transparency. If they're getting $20 billion in aged care, in government subsidies, that's our taxes. We need to know how they're spending it. Last December, the Centre Alliance Party put forward a bill, an amendment bill, trying to get financial transparency in the aged care sector. And it was absolutely appalling to find that the current government voted against the Liberal government and National Party government voted against this legislation. And I just don't understand why these private companies are resisting financial transparency. They keep asking for more money, but they're not prepared to tell us how they're spending it.
So, Gay, there is an inquiry in Victoria into hotel quarantine and how it led to this spread. Do you think that we'll see the same for aged care? Should we see the same for aged care?
We should see the same thing happen. We do need an inquiry, and there have been calls for an inquiry. There's been an indication from the federal government that the current Royal Commission will look into aged care outbreaks, but just recently that the commission has come out and said, look, there needs to be something separate. We don't have the resources or the time to give the attention that this really requires. And to find out what happened, not just at Newmarch where there is an inquiry, but what happened in this Victorian outbreak, what were the responsibilities, because it's such a complex industry, is absolutely vital.
We've already had so many inquiries in the past into aged care in Australia, and there's still so many flaws in this sector, as we've seen. Do you think that this disaster could finally be the catalyst to kind of radically change our approach to aged care in Australia?
I can only say I hope so. I mean, if it isn't, I'm not sure what would. You know, the Royal Commission was so scathing in its interim report last year, and it mentioned the dozens and dozens of inquiries and the piecemeal response, that this has highlighted not just the problems with the coronavirus and the vulnerability of people in aged care, but the systemic issues that have not just been recently known, not just been recently popped up, that have been existing in the sector for decades.
I think the most important thing is the community gets behind this and we agitate, because in the past we've had 20 inquiries, we've had fantastic recommendations from these inquiries that haven't been actioned, we haven't had the community in uproar, we haven't been on the streets protesting, we haven't been doing that because we actually think our older people will be looked after. It's kind of a shock to many people to think that our older people aren't being looked after. And the thing about aged care, particularly residential aged care, is you don't really see what it's like until you have a relative in aged care, or if you're in aged care yourself. It's not something that's front and centre of the community's attention. And I think this pandemic, if this doesn't do it, I just don't know what will.
The Aged Care Guild, that represents some private aged care providers, responded to the allegations in this episode, stating that the $200 million of federal funding given to the industry at the start of the pandemic has been used to prevent and prepare for COVID-19, as well as care for senior Australians residing in aged care homes. It is important to note that all Aged Care Guild members spend more on care than they receive in government subsidisation. Also, the management of St. Basil's Homes for the Aged said in a series of statements that they deny allegations of poor infection control and lack of communication. They also state that the COVID-19 outbreak there was brought in by asymptomatic staff. That's it for today. Thanks to Dr. Sarah Russell and Gay Alcorn for their time. You can read their writing and reporting on the COVID-19 crisis in Victoria's aged care homes at theguardian.com, and we've also put some links on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Beater and Joe Koning. Our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson.